Now, the next big subject on sex play and exploring your sexual boundary is toys. So let's do toys. You all know dildos. This is a dildo. If you don't know what a strap-on is, I'm sure you've heard the term, it's this harness. This is a nice leather strap-on harness, and the dildo goes right in here so that you have a penis. So this is great for people who don't have penises. Surprisingly, sometimes people who do have penises still wear strap-ons because maybe they're not able to get good hard erections for whatever the reasons are about. And that always blows my mind when somebody with a penis is using a strap. It happens. These are cock rings. You put them around the base of your penis to help maintain your erection. See what else we have. This is a dildo that moves. It's a vibrator. And this particular one is the famous rabbit, which got famous in the Sex and the City episode, because there's this little rabbit here. And the idea is when this is in your vagina, this tickles your clitoris right there. I don't have a rabbit. I've heard they're very, very noisy and they go through batteries quickly. But they work. Okay, who knows what this funny looking dildo is? Very good. I knew somebody would know. And how do you know it's a butt plug? Well, the big clue off is this base. Butt plugs have a big base so that they don't go into your butt all the way and not come out again. Which, by the way, brings up the fact that whenever you're using any toy in a mode that's penetrating you, it's a good idea to use a condom on it. It's good for hygiene, and it's also good for emergency extraction in some cases. Let's see. These are some beads, which are used, by the way, all this stuff comes from Good Vibrations. I got it off Good Vibes website, the pictures. The idea with these beads is you insert them sensually, one by one, into presumably your partner's anus during foreplay. And then right when you're ready to come, you pull them out, and it gives your partner a real thrill. This is traditionally done with a string of pearls, or it can be done with these specialized beads. I've never done this myself, but I've heard it's quite the thrill.
Are they dishwasher safe?
I don't know. I don't know.
Let's hope so.
Oh boy, I've got to move along. Benoit balls or duotone balls, which are inserted in the vagina. And okay, who knows what this is?
It's a hummer.
Yeah, really good. One of the things that I did not learn until I had my own vagina was that generally women do not get orgasms by stuff shoved into their vagina. Vaginas come from the clitoris. Orgasms. Did I say vagina? Orgasms come from the clitoris, which is on the outside, not from inside the vagina. And so this is a vibrator that just goes over your vulva and it'll vibrate and stimulate your clitoris. Okay. Yeah, about Good Vibrations. And this is the ultimate sex toy. You all know about blow-up dolls, but I just had to show you. These are full-size silicone rubber real dolls for realdoll.com. This costs like $7,000. It ships to your house in a plain brown crate. You can order it with the wicked outfit that you choose. If I met a guy who had one of these, I don't know if I'd want to date him. But that's kind of hypocritical because I'm saying everything goes, it's all all right. So I should say it's all right if he has a real doll.
They're about to show women order that doll.
Yeah.
They're about to show women order that doll on HBO.
Oh, yeah? Okay, next topic, the big topic of kinky sexuality is BDSM. But I'm running out of time, so I'm going to go quickly through that. Here's a guy who's into bondage.
That's Harry Houdini.
That's Harry Houdini, yeah. I think he must have had a thing going. BDSM stands for bondage and discipline, dominance and submission, sadism and masochism. So it's an overloaded acronym. Of course, this is not primarily a trans thing. The BDSM community is mostly heterosexual people, normies, cisgender people, but they tend to be tolerant and welcoming of trans people. And a lot of trans people get involved in it. If you've never been involved in any BDSM stuff, you might think it's all scary and dangerous and stuff. And so mainly my message for today is it turns out it's not all that scary and it's not dangerous. Safety is the first concern in all BDSM scenes. And once again, nobody's ever going to beat you without your consent. It's all done consensually and all planned. So some of the things that get done is a dominant person will have a scene with a submissive person, a sub, a dom and a sub, or more than one dom or more than one sub, but often a dom and a sub. And the sub could be tied up, spanked, flogged, whipped, any of those fun things. Other things in the BDSM scene that are a little more sophisticated are fire play, edge play, which is knives and razors, water play, which is urine, scat play, blood play. Now that stuff's all pretty creepy to me, and I've never seen it in any of the scenes I've been at, except by some demonstrations for people who are expert at it. If a dungeon is going to allow any of this kind of play, they need special hygiene facilities and plastic and stuff. So even though that stuff takes place, it shouldn't scare you off from exploring the BDSM scene, because you probably won't see any of it. BDSM is all about the toys. And so here are some of the toys real quick. We've got, in the middle, we've got the famous St. Andrew's Cross, which is like our favorite toy. So there we can put this guy up on the St. Andrew's Cross. So that's a good thing to get chained to. And then you can get flogged with floggers and paddled with paddles and riding crops. What else have we got? Oh, doms often like to put a collar on their sub, or maybe they'll call them a slave and put them on a leash, a dog collar and a leash. That can be quite fun. Stocks, slings, yokes, all sorts of good stuff. And here is an ass that has been thoroughly flogged. It may or may not belong to me. And just to let you know, all of this horrible bruising goes away in a week. That's actually not any permanent damage. I must say, a very cute ass. Bondage is kind of interesting. Tying is actually an art form. You find people who are into tying that can do beautiful, artfully done knots in tying. It's very fun to watch sometime. And it can really get taken to an extreme. Believe it or not, this guy is having the time of his life. So, what else can we have for more fun? There's age play, where you might want to dress up like a little girl or a baby. There's diaper guys, the men who like to pretend they're babies and be diapered and be treated like a baby. There's furries, which is people who like to put on fur suits and dress up like animals. Pony people are a particular subgenre of furries. Cat people are very popular. Furries is not primarily a sexual thing either. There was a furry convention I went to here a couple of months ago that they're just into anthropomorphized animals, and they like the artwork and the movies and the Magna and all of that stuff. But the sexuality part of it can be fun too. There's foodies. So there's Roger Daltrey and a Cupful of Baked Beans from the Sellout album. These are people, I'm not sure if foodies is a real term, that's what I kind of said, or messies. They like messy stuff. So they like a tub full of baked beans or molasses or pudding or mud or anything like that, and have a big old mess. It turns them on. Now, there's even clown sex. And you mentioned Real Sex, the HBO show. I happened to be flipping through and I saw something about clown sex on there one night. And I said, surely they just made this up for this program. There's no such thing as clown sex. Yeah, but I was at the opening of the TGSF, or the LGBT Center in San Francisco, the big opening party, and there was a group of naughty clowns there. And they were making naughty balloon animals. And all of the lesbians were running around with large banana phalluses. There's large balloon phalluses. And so clown sex is really real. Some people get off on that. Some things I didn't have a chance to go into is group sex, you know, threesomes, swingers, sex parties. There's fetish balls, where you can wear all your best fetish gear and just go out dancing. Fetish gear includes latex and rubber and vinyl clothes. There's BBWs, big, beautiful women. Some people are really into big, beautiful women. So if you're a big, beautiful woman, don't think that you're left out. People like taking photography, taking pictures, or making movies. There's exhibitionism, which happens to be a turn-on for me, it turns out, like you'd ever guess. And the message is that almost anything you can think of that you think may turn you on, there's other people out there who like that too. And thanks to the internet, you can find them these days. And maybe you want to explore that. Maybe it's something you want to do. And if it turns you on, isn't that great that you found out something that turns you on? Go enjoy it. So that concludes part one. A few minutes late, but moving on. Part two. Is there sex after SRX?
Yes.
What? Oh, yes. Okay. I guess we're done. If you found any of this kinky or interesting stuff to be a turn-on to you before SRS, maybe it's still a turn-on to you after SRS, and that's great. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. There's no reason to stop. There's no reason to stop dressing up just because you're a post-op. That turns you on. But it turns out most of us, after our SRS and when we settle into our life, our favorite thing sexually is plain old vanilla sex, preferably with somebody that we care for deeply. And so that's mostly what part two is going to be about. Thank you, I appreciate that confirmation. So, after you have your sex reassignment surgery, the first thing that goes in your vagina is a dilator. And you get the standard dilator set from Duratec Plastics in Canada now. It costs about $200. And it's a set of graduated stents that go from 1 inch in diameter to 1.5 inch diameter. And you insert this into your vagina for an hour at a time, 4 times a day, every day for the first couple of weeks after your surgery. And you keep doing that forever, but it starts tailing off and you do it less and less. So I do it like once a week now. And it's to stretch out your pubogynococcus muscle, which they put a hole through to build your vagina. And as you step up through these dilators, even though each one's just like an eighth of an inch bigger, it hurts like hell. Some gals name their dilators. I named my biggest one Del Ron Hubbard. And here's Del Ron Hubbard. And I just ordered a new set that goes from 1.5 inches to 2 inches because I decided I'd like to be a little bigger. And I've already named my new biggest one Tony Soprano. So you have to do that for a while, and it's not very sexy. But eventually you decide you'd like to do something else with your vagina. Now, people always want to know, gee, you've had sex as a man and sex as a woman. What's the difference? Well, I'll tell you all about it. The first thing that people think about is penetration. You know, people who have had a penis all their life, though, what does it feel like to be penetrated? That must feel so different and so interesting. Well, it doesn't feel like much, actually, it turns out. The inside of my vagina, and to my understanding, pretty much all women's vaginas, is not very sensitive at all. In fact, I don't even really know when the guy's got it in there. I have to go feel around to go, oh, yes, that's in there now. If you want to know what penetration is like, have anal sex. It feels a lot more like penetration. To me, it feels like I got to poop real bad, but anyway. however, physically, penetration doesn't feel like that much, but psychologically, it's a big deal. It really makes a difference to me when I'm having sex to be the one who's being penetrated instead of penetrating. So just as a psychological feeling, it makes a big difference, but it also makes a big difference because of what my role is. You know, the guy is responsible for getting and maintaining the erection, and I don't have to worry about that anymore. Sometimes I can help if I feel like it, but basically, like Erica Jong said, vaginas are always ready to go. Penis is not quite. So I no longer have performance anxiety to deal with. But it's interesting that now I have freshness anxiety. You know the old sayings is that a woman always knows when she's going to have sex at the end of a date because she has to shave her legs before the date. Well, there's a certain amount of truth to that, but there's more to it than that. She also cleans her vagina and makes sure she's nice and fresh. And it's funny that I worry about that because I know guys are not very picky about that. They just like the pussy. But I don't want to have the stinky pussy, thank you. So I've got freshness anxiety. Then, of course, there's foreplay. I finally found out what foreplay is all about. And it's really important to me now. There's a reason for it. It takes women much longer to get sexually aroused than men. I've heard anywhere from 13 minutes to 45 minutes. And so they need this amount of sex play to get them aroused. And back up here in the performance anxiety area, I kind of like to say, oh, one of the things I really like about sex there is I just lay there and the guy has to do all the work. It's kind of nice. I guess I'm sub. But actually, the thing is, I just lay there until he gets me revved up, and then I start really contributing. Then his jaguar, and I'm not referring to that euphemistically, I really mean his jaguar, is suddenly important to me. Now, this surprised the hell out of me, because I've always made a good salary, I've always taken care of myself, I got money in the bank, I can afford everything I need. Why is it important to me that the guy has some money, and that he's willing to spend it on me? But it is. It's become really important. I will not pay for dinner on a date. I mean, I may do it now and then if I'm going with somebody, but if I get taken out, I expect him to be buying for me. And I'm not sure what it is. Part of it, I think, is because it's a way that indicates that he really likes me. But there's more to it than that because, you know, a guy who doesn't have a lot of money can really like me too, but I still prefer to go out with a guy who has money because he can treat me nice and give me nice gifts and take me nice places. And that's become really important to me. So I always thought women who were like that were gold diggers, but I just think it's part of the way that women feel. I think it's kind of, you know, we want to be taken care of. We want a guy who can take care of us. And then there's always this one. You know, they say men use love to get sex, and women use sex to get love. And it seems to be true. I mean, that switched on me. The act of sex was important more in its own right than in building a relationship. But now, building the relationship and having a real connection with the guy or the girl is more important to me than just the sex. It's not that I don't like the sex, but the connection is very important. And there's one more thing that's not on this list, and I already talked about it a little bit. What about orgasms? To be or not to be? Orgasmic. Well, neo-vaginas, vaginas in post-op transsexual women, are theoretically all capable of having orgasms. My clitoris is made from the nerve bundles that used to be at the head of my penis. That nerve bundle was all preserved and repositioned to become my clitoris. So it's the same stimulation that I used to get as a male. And post-op trans women who have orgasms say they are like female orgasms, not like male orgasms. They sort of shake your whole body and you can have multiples and go and go and go. Unfortunately, I don't know about that because I'm inorgasmic. I was hoping that after a while I would find myself becoming orgasmic because some girls are lucky enough that while they're dilating, 2 or 3 weeks after their surgery, they suddenly go, "Oh, what was that?" And they find they have an orgasm. Often because they brushed their clitoris while they were dilating. Most don't, and they say it takes like 6 months to a year for the nerve pathways to remap themselves in your brain and your new equipment to settle down from all the horrible trauma that's been going on down there. And it's kind of like having a baby, you know, really wrecks you down there, and it's just a while before you feel like having sex again. But I feel like having sex again, but I don't have orgasms. And they say that maybe 50% of trans women never experience orgasm. Well, that sounds like a big, horrible deal, and it's kind of a disappointment. But it turns out it's not much different than for cisgender women. I've heard anything from a third to a half of all women generally don't experience orgasm. And I'm not necessarily convinced I'm never going to have it. It's something I'm working on. So let's talk a little more about neo-vaginas. Guys like to talk about how big their penis is. Post-ops like to talk about how deep their vaginas are. And are they deep enough? The magic number for vaginas, neo-vaginas, is 8 inches. We like to have a surgeon who will guarantee that he can give you an 8-inch depth. Which Dr. Saporn does, and I don't think Dr. Meltzer guarantees it, but I think he pretty much always gets there. I think 6 inches is more common than 8 inches, and that should be plenty because Dr. Lawrence has some research on her site that says penises on the average are around 5 or 6 inches long. Vaginas in cisgender women are only on the average 3 to 4 inches long. So a penis bottoming out in a vagina is a common thing. Now, I think regular vaginas, natural vaginas, are a little stretchier when that happens, so it's not like a hard stop. When you get to the end of my vagina, it's a hard stop. Unfortunately, my vagina is only 3.5 inches. I've heard that post-op transsexual women lie about how deep their vagina is, or it's also difficult to say how exactly do you measure that. So I don't know how unusual I am. But it's a little short. Guys do bottom out in me. It's not enough to stop sex from happening. It can still be enjoyable, but you may have to pick your positions a little more carefully and that sort of thing. Theoretically, if I dilate really, really hard, I can get more depth into my vagina, but I've tried that and it doesn't seem to work. And my surgeon just says, you just don't have room in there. I'm just little down there. There's no room for it. I'm sorry? Dr. Annette Shalhoub in Palo Alto. She's semi-retired now. She's raising her babies. Dr. Peter Davis has taken over the practice, and she assists at his SRSs now. Now, there's a vibrator. The Hitachi Magic Wand is well known to be the vibrator of choice for women. This thing's big. It plugs into the wall. It does not go inside your vagina. I am sorry. This is strictly for clitoral stimulation. Oh, look, and see, it even can't stay still on the slide.
It's clearly your favorite.
Huh?
It's clearly your favorite.
Well, I'm trying. It hasn't wooed me yet. So let's drop back a little bit. You've had your SRS. You're ready to put your vagina to work for the purpose it was intended. How do you pop your cherry? Well, it's a good thing to try to find an understanding, supportive partner, because this is new equipment for you. You don't know how to use it yet. You don't even know what sex is going to be like with it yet. You want somebody who's patient. You don't really want to go out to a bar and pick up an unsuspecting guy and take him home and let him take potluck and think he's got an experienced woman. And, you know, 50-year-old virgins are kind of unusual anyway, too, so... Turns out an understanding partner may well be another trans woman, perhaps a pre-op trans woman or a cross-dresser that has a penis. And in fact, that's what I did. I had several trans women for sex partners initially. Very caring and very understanding and very nice. And a pre-op transsexual woman is particularly interested in this because she's going there herself one day, so she's a really good partner. The other thing you can do is go find yourself a sex party or an orgy, and that's actually what I did when I decided I want to get a guy. So I looked up the swingers party and I went. I announced that I was a trans woman, and one guy fled the room in horror, but another really cute young guy said, okay, I'll still go. And we went. The thing I have to tell you about swingers parties and orgies is do not expect foreplay. It's not about foreplay. So, you're supposed to go on dates to get guys. One of the things that was a big surprise to me when I began living my life as a woman is that I wasn't getting hit on. I thought that women get hit on all the time. I thought that any woman could get laid any time she wanted, because when I was a heterosexual male, I sure would have been willing to lay any woman at any time. And it turns out it's not true. In 4 years of living full-time as a woman, I've been what I would actually call getting hit on, had a stranger come up and talk to me and like be interested in a date or something like that twice. And neither of those resulted in a date, actually. It may be different if you're 25 years old or 18 years old, but when you're 50 years old, you don't get hit on. So what do? Well, in the 21st century, you use online dating services. At this point, I'd advise you not to use Match.com, not to pay for it, because there's plenty of free services out there now. Plenty of Fish.com or OkCupid.com. Or the very best dating site in the world is, so you seem to know everything, you know the answer to this one? Anybody? exist. Yay! And Craigslist has a few categories that might be interesting to someone like me. They have women seeking men. They also have casual encounters, which is basically sex dates. And that looks really sleazy, but if you look through it carefully, you can find some kind of decent-sounding guys. The thing I found about online dating as a woman is you don't want to be answering ads. You want to place ads. Just, you know, guys don't like you chasing them. They want to chase. And I've also found out you don't want to tell them you're a trans woman in your ad, if you're passable. If you're passable, you wait for the third date, and then you tell them. And now, that screens out 90% of the guys, because you usually don't get a second date. And then you don't have to go through it at all. And I find it really cool telling guys on third dates, because they're all like going, okay, this is the sex date, this is the sex date. And I give them that. We've got something to talk about first. Oh, yes, I've had a sex change. Now, I have not had very good luck getting dates at all. I've only really dated one guy, you know, more than one or two dates. But I have found two guys who did not cut and run when I told them I was trans. So they can be found. One of them, I think, has some gender issues of his own. But okay, too. It may show that I'm attracted to guys who have gender issues, which would not surprise me. Well, sooner or later you find some dates or you manage to meet somebody, hopefully. So what about life partners? Well, a lot of us who transition are married before we transition, and if you're lucky and if you really want it, you may be able to stay married after you transition. That may not be true if we re-elect this administration one more time. They're sure taking our rights away. But for now, you can stay married. It's not true if you're in England, I understand, these days. Right now in England, you have a choice. You can get divorced and change your legal identity to a female, or you can stay legally a man and stay married. Hopefully that won't last too long. If you're a trans woman, you can marry a man. Now, is it legal? Well, I don't know. But if nobody questions it, you can just go get married. The place where it gets questioned is when problems come up, like a divorce. You know, somebody might decide, well, it's not a divorce because it was never a marriage because you're really a man, especially if there's child custody considerations. And it comes up when they're probating wills. Somebody can challenge the will and go, well, she can't inherit because she was never really his wife because she's a man. And as you probably all know, there's been these cases in courts, and sometimes they go one way and sometimes they go the other way. So whether you're really married or not is a question. And that's why all of us should be very supportive of the so-called same-sex marriage legislation, because it's not really same-sex marriage, it's gender-neutral marriage. And that's
the case.
I think they recently changed a law, though, as long as you actually have, mm-hmm. that's recently changed.
Yeah, but, you know, we'll see if it holds up. Let's hope so.
Other states may not recognize it, though.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is here.
I also know about 4,000 couples in California who was told their marriage is no longer valid.
Yeah.
Because they were married same-sex in San Francisco last year. So, you know, the key thing about any legal battle is don't get involved in one. Because it's never going to be an optimal outcome. You can always live with somebody without getting married, of course, and that might be a man, and that might be a woman, that might be another trans woman. And it actually turns out that most trans women who wind up in permanent relationships are in permanent relationships with other trans women. It turns out we really understand each other, and we get along well, and we're certainly very accepting of each other. So that's one thing that may well lie in our future. I met a handful of trans women who have met and married men and are very happy. The man's attitude is always, well, I don't believe she was ever a man as far as I'm concerned. She was always a woman. And that's great because that's exactly, you know, the attitude that I have about myself. So that's a guy who gets it. But you may not ever have a life partner. You may wind up living alone. And I've seen a statistic that says that half of trans women wind up living alone. And that may sound like a horrible thing too, but it turns out most women wind up living alone because women outlive their husbands. Welcome to the world of womanhood. And at 2 minutes to the hour, I am done. Now, that's kind of a downer note to end on, so I just added as an up note, yes, there can be sex before and after SRS, and I would encourage you to explore it and enjoy it and enrich your life with it. And I would encourage you to go to my Cafe Press site, and you can get, are there still buttons there? Help yourself to buttons or magnets or silly T-shirts like this. Just one question. Just let me get through the promos. And then, of course, I'm the author of How to Change Your Sex, which you can get at lulu.com or at Amazon or Borders Books, but it's a little cheaper at lulu.com. Yes, questions, comments?
I was just going to hear you talk about
that. Oh, is that, who did you get that from?
Sue Born?
Oh, okay. And what are you doing carrying around your body?
No, I just quiet down.
Oh.
I don't, you know, I have a holster usually.
Okay. The dilators from Intelligence Engineering that I got a few years ago, they have a ring, a couple of them have rings etched in them.
Yeah, these are etched in, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I use to imagine my death.
Yeah,
but of course, you know, yeah, where do you count the ring from? But anyway, I kind of go like this, and as far down as this I can go, that's my depth. Yeah. Questions, comments? Oh, come on, this is about sex. Nobody has any questions about sex.
What do you want to know? Yes. What would you like to
Where
know?
Do babies come from?
The store.
Yeah,
what kind of
yeah.
sex?
Well, I'm like you in that my depth is over now. Mm-hmm. And if any of
Mia does.
I have
she has my surgeon too.
I went to Sue Point and
I also had a trans woman who is like 15 years post-op, and she said that a dirty little secret is that everybody shrinks up over time. How long post-op are you? So let us know in 5 years what your next
is. Well, yeah, they said when you have I started out with like 7, no more than 7.
Yeah, I started out with 5.
The key is to be able to say that you have a continuum back, like it's a full depth and holding. I think you hit on the head. You got to, some people like this, kill stages, and they say what you don't do in the earlier stages affects you in the year. They say if you start out your first year and you dilate to full depth.
Any other questions? If there's still buttons back there, you can take a button if they're not too embarrassing. Thank you very much for coming.
Oh, yes. You bought some t-shirts?
Do I want some t-shirts?
Did you bring some of your t-shirts?
No, I didn't bring any t-shirts. The t-shirts are expensive on our cafe. I probably priced all my stuff. All my t-shirts, $1 over their cost, and my buttons, 50 cents.
Okay.
Yeah. No, you can go to Cafe Press and get it. Cafe Press / Wayne Rose. Yes.
I've enjoyed your book this year.
Well, thank you. It's now in its second edition, and I encourage you not to buy it because there's hardly any difference whatsoever. The main difference is there's a preface to the second edition that says there's not much difference. Yeah. I'm not in it for the profit. I'm in it to spread the good news. Thank you very much for coming.